You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game podcast commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag and enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. That's at MyBookie.ag. So as we chat on this Tuesday, it's the third consecutive off day for the Rockets. We last saw them Saturday night in Memphis when they posted another 20-plus point win with the second game of Chris Paul's return. Two games for Chris since coming back from the knee injury, two 20-plus point wins, as good as it can be right now if you're a Rockets fan. They've been off since then, having an opportunity to do a lot of Thanksgiving-related charity items in Houston, which is always great. The Rockets play this week, tomorrow night, Wednesday night, Thanksgiving Eve against Denver, then Saturday, both games in Houston, so they have a full week to rest up. And for a team that's been kind of taxed the first month of the season between the Chris Paul injury and the ripple effects throughout the rotation of having to overextend some guys, it's great to have a full week that they can be home. But with this being an extended period without basketball, well, Rockets fans were looking a lot of other places to fill our time, and certainly watching the Thunder continue to struggle. I know a lot of folks enjoy that. Thunder fell to 7-9 last night after dropping a 19-point lead at one point and still losing to the Pelicans. Russell Westbrook posted a triple-double, but just as has happened so many times with the Thunder this season, it didn't matter. Thunder are now five games back in the loss column behind the Rockets, actually 5.5 overall because they're six back in the win column, 7-9 versus the Rockets at 13-4. So that's a tremendous degree of separation for two teams that were thought going into the year to be kind of 2A and 2B when it comes to fighting for the second seed in the Western Conference. Through the first 20-plus percent of the season, it actually feels like the Rockets are a lot closer to the Warriors than the Thunder are to the Rockets, which is great news for those of us in Houston. Now, in a few moments to break down where the Rockets are, the start to the season, James Harden, Chris Paul, I'm going to be joined by Craig Ackerman. You know him as well, one of the two lead play-by-play broadcasters for the AT&T Southwest broadcast. Craig usually has the road games while Bill Worrell is the lead play-by-play for the home. But when Bill is on the mic for the home games for TV, Craig is the lead voice on Rockets radio over at Sports Talk 790. So either way, Craig is Rockets play-by-play for all 82 games of each and every season, so he's got some great insight. I've had him on several times this past year. This will be his first time in the 2017-2018 season, so I'm excited to pick his brain. I think you guys will enjoy him as an interview as well, assuming you're not already sick of him by listening to him so much over the air. But I find that hard to believe because I think Craig does a wonderful job as a play-by-play guy, and Rockets fans are lucky to have him. We're getting him connected. He's going to be with us in just a few minutes. But to start off, with this being such an extended period of no basketball, I want to lead off with some comments about James Harden. Because certainly the theme to the Rockets, yes, it's a much improved team overall, but it starts with James, and we all know why. Every advanced metric has him as far and away the best player in the NBA. He's averaging over 31 points per game, pretty much right at 10 assists per game, 9.9. Player efficiency rating is just a ridiculous 30.5. Just an incredible start to the year for James. His three-point shooting is even over 40% now, which is just absurd given that he's shooting over 11 attempts per game from behind the arc. So it's been a phenomenal start to the year for James, and it's not a small sample size anymore. We're over 20% of the way into the season. So even though it's not Thanksgiving, yeah, there's been a lot of basketball played, and we're getting to a point where those three dirty letters are being mentioned again, those being MVP. And I know a lot of Rockets fans sort of recoil when they hear that, because, of course, the consensus in Houston is that Harden should have won the MVP two of the past 3 years before ultimately he finished second to Stephen Curry in the 2015 balloting and to Russell Westbrook in the 2017 balloting. And while I was as frustrated as anyone with that, I thought Harden should have won both years. And as I've said before, I think he should be going for his third MVP and be the front runner for his third MVP in 4 years. His regular season performances have just been otherworldly for the Rockets these past few seasons. Nonetheless, he has yet to win an MVP. Well, he did win MVP courtesy of the players, but he hasn't won the official Writers Award. So I do get the sense of pessimism. However, I want to start off by pointing out that I think a lot of Rockets fans, in my opinion, are overdoing it. Yes, I've seen a few folks, the likes of Charles Barkley, Stephen A. Smith. I'll note that these are not exactly guys who watch the games with a lot of nuance or much depth in terms of supporting evidence. But folks, I think Harden at this point, if the MVP balloting were held, would win going away. And there is reason to buy in. Now, that doesn't mean he's automatically going to do it. There's a ton of basketball to play. There are other storylines that can emerge. But through 20 games, every MVP race, every MVP balloting of any substance, USA Today has a weekly tracker, has Harden number one with a bullet. He is far and away the number one. And yes, I've seen, as I said, Barkley, Stephen A. throwing out names like Kyrie Irving. To me, that's a little silly. And it actually, as frustrating as it is, I think Rockets fans, through some of their critiques about Harden and not buying into the MVP race because of this quote-unquote being slighted the last two of the past three seasons, I think that actually undersells just how great Stephen Curry and Russell Westbrook were. Because Stephen Curry, again, this is a guy, best player on the best team back in 2015. The Warriors were the story last year. That was when they made the jump from being basically an upper 40s to around 50-win team to out of nowhere being a mid-60s juggernaut. Stephen Curry was by far the best player on that team. Every events metric had him at worst as top five in the league. Many had him at one or two. So yes, I believe Harden deserved it more, especially when you consider the supporting cast around the two players. However, Stephen Curry was really freaking phenomenal that season. The same applies for Russell Westbrook last year. We can say what we will about individual stats, the triple-double being overemphasized, but the fact was, it was an incredible individual season for Russell Westbrook. Those numbers, triple-double, averaging almost 30 points per game in the process, coming right after the departure of Kevin Durant, it was incredible. And his performance in the clutch, he stole games that the Thunder had no business taking. As I've said going into the year, part of the reason why I thought the Rockets would be a better team than the Thunder this year, and so far that's exactly what's played out, is because the Thunder actually overachieved last year because, well, they outperformed the Pythagorean by four games, and that's because Westbrook, in addition to the overall stat line, was just otherworldly in the final few minutes of close games. So as frustrating as it is, as I've said before, I think Harden was clearly better. At the same time, Westbrook was incredibly, historically good. It just wasn't quite as good as Harden, in my opinion. And the reason I point that out is that I think there's a tendency amongst a lot of Rockets fans to think that the NBA media or certain writers have it out against James Harden. And sometimes it's not about you. Sometimes it's about the other guy. And I know it feels like to some extent that the goalposts move because you use one standard for Curry and you use a different one for Westbrook. But the fact of the matter is, both of those guys, no matter how you slice it, had incredible seasons. There is no one right there, certainly not Kyrie Irving, who doesn't even grade out as the best player on his team, according to most analytics that I've looked at. Actually, Al Horford, because the Celtics are defensive-oriented, Al Horford seems to be the Celtics' best MVP candidate, but certainly he's not a worthy winner. The point that I'm trying to make is this. Stephen Curry, Russell Westbrook, those are understandable MVPs. To go from saying, well, because Harden lost to Curry or Westbrook, to then expecting him to lose to Kyrie Irving, that's a leap. That's paranoia. I don't think, based on Stephen Curry or Russell Westbrook winning, that the NBA media is out to get James Harden. I get the frustration. I think he should have won both years. However, I don't think that the bias is so systemic that it's going to prevent Harden from winning an MVP, especially if he's just, as he's been this year, just so transcendent and far and beyond more valuable than any other player. You know, last year you could at least find some models that showed Westbrook as number one over Harden, even though I think by and large Harden won most of them, at least the ones that I looked at. This year, I'm not seeing any. Harden's number one across the board, and if this type of advantage persists, not only do I expect him to win, I expect him to win by a lot. So I know it's early, a lot of stuff can change, but right now, no, I think a lot of Rockets fans are overdoing the pessimism, and to some extent, I don't think it actually helps James in the voting. I think in general, if you go around with an outlook of expecting to be screwed and treating the media like they're not going to even consider James, then to some extent, it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You bring that on yourself. So as frustrating as it may be, I think the best course of action for Rockets fans on Twitter, and I know this has come up a lot in the past few days because of the extended off time, I think the best way to handle this MVP race, point out James's attributes. He's having a phenomenal year. There's no reason to dwell on the past, because if you do, and you make it seem like that, well, James is going to get screwed no matter what, I think it does a little bit of disservice to Stephen Curry and Russell Westbrook, who did have incredible seasons. And beyond that, I think it also makes Houston fans look a little illogical that you're saying that because, well, Stephen Curry and Russell Westbrook did this, then all of a sudden it means they're going to vote for Kyrie Irving, because there's a huge leap between Westbrook and Curry from the past 3 years and what Kyrie is doing now. And I'm just mentioning Kyrie because he seems to be the hottest name other than Harden at the moment. It may shift throughout the season, but for right now, folks, it is James Harden's award, and yes, I think you can buy in. We'll see if it changes. But the good news, you know, we'll see what happens over the next 65 games in the course of the Rockets, the remainder of the 82. The good news is that if Harden stays healthy, and knock on wood, that's always the caveat, but if he stays healthy, I think it's going to be hard for another narrative to emerge. First off, I do think there are a lot of people in the NBA media that do sympathize with James's plight because he's had very convincing cases in two of the past 3 years and has not won in either. I think, to some extent, a lot of media feel like they owe him. I think that could help. Beyond that, I'm not really seeing a big storyline emerge. Russell Westbrook was an obvious one from the jump last year because of Kevin Durant's departure, and then you had the triple-double. It's certainly not going to be Russell Westbrook this year with the way that the Thunder are wildly underachieving. You look at the other big-name players, I don't think it's going to be anyone in Boston. First off, I don't think that their level of play is going to persist. There's a reason they should have lost to Dallas last night. Their point differential is worse than the Rockets. They're a good team, yes. They're not a mid-60s-plus type team, especially not without Gordon Hayward. They're going to fall off. My bet is, even being an Eastern Conference team, they have a worse record than the Rockets. But even if it's a comparable record, Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, whatever name you want to throw out there, there's no way you can mount any kind of case whatsoever that they're as valuable as James Harden. So I don't see the Celtics being a player for MVP. The Warriors, yes, they're really good, but because there's so much shared equity with Curry and Durant, there doesn't seem to be any kind of convincing storyline for one of those guys. So I think when you look at the true top five level players, Harden's got the best narrative, and I think that's part of what sells. Russell Westbrook had that last year. James Harden has it this year, especially with there's a certain redemption angle with regards to the MVP race last year. Also, you could say his playoff performance when he tailed off at the end of the Spurs series. I think Harden has the most convincing narrative. The only guy I'm kind of worried about long term would be LeBron James, because the Cavaliers, they were never as bad as their start, but nonetheless, they did have a losing record through the first, 13, 14 games. They did lose Kyrie Irving in the offseason. There's also inherently going to be a lot of focus on LeBron this year because he's going to be a free agent next summer. So if the Cavs turn it around, and I feel like that inevitably they will, maybe LeBron gets some attention. It's also been a long time since he's won an MVP, so maybe, you know, sometimes I sense amongst NBA Twitter, the national types, there's a sense that they know LeBron gets taken for granted, which he probably does. He's been the best player for such a long time, that maybe if Cleveland has a great season, they'll find a way to get LeBron that award. But personally, I doubt it, because Cleveland over the years has shown over the regular season their main priority, especially with LeBron in his 30s, is to manage him, and I don't think he's going to play the raw minute total to get to, well, to get the Cavs to the win total that they need to be alongside the Rockets and Harden in this running. And also, just from an overall volume standpoint, I don't think LeBron at this point in his career is likely to play enough to be a serious challenger to Harden. But he's the one guy that, you know, if all of a sudden, this being his free agency year, he says F it and starts playing, you know, these lofty minute totals, doesn't have any injuries, and all of a sudden Cleveland starts winning at a 55-plus win pace again, maybe even retakes the number one from the Celtics, all of that's unlikely, because right now, you know, you look at their point differential, it's not a pretty picture at all. But LeBron's the one guy amongst, you know, the clear top 5 or 10 players that might have a narrative to rival Harden. And right now, as I said, they've barely just broke even. They're at plus 0.2 in the point differential. So there's a long way for that to go. That's the only guy I could see kind of coming on the horizon. Otherwise, I think Harden is in a very good spot in the running. I know a lot of folks don't like hearing that, but I do think this year there's ample reason to believe it could be different. There's certainly no any systemic bias against Houston. Look at Jose Altuve, who didn't just win MVP of the American League in baseball, won it with 27 of the 30 votes, overwhelming, even though Aaron Judge had a hell of a compelling case. So yes, I get the frustration. And by the way, Altuve was a finalist last year and didn't win. So just because it happened 1 year or 2 years in Harden's case, it doesn't mean you can't break through down the line. I get the frustration. I get why you're not going to fully buy in and assume he's going to win it until he actually does. But yes, between Harden's level of dominance, the narratives, the lack of any, you know, clear rival, I would say, in terms of the top of the MVP ladder, the clear top brands in the game, yeah, I think there's a very real chance that Harden could get it this year. That's just my opinion, though. I am going to be joined and talk about it a little bit more in just a few moments by Craig Ackerman, the Rockets' lead play-by-play broadcaster. But before I get to him, I do want to pause and acknowledge our awesome sponsors over at MyBookie, because, folks, since I have launched this podcast, I get asked all the time, who's going to win this week's big game? For example, Warriors and Thunder tomorrow. People are asking me who I think is going to win it. By the way, I'm leaning to Warriors because, of course. And beyond that, who should I bet on? How does it impact the Rockets? Because certainly, yeah, there's always a trickle-down effect to the Rockets. But also, well, there's money to be made. So, yeah, if you want to bet on that game or any others, folks, what I will tell you is that where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. So that's why I always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. That's our sponsors today. And, folks, MyBookie, the reason I believe in them, they have been in the business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so right off the bat, folks, you're making money for doing nothing. And they've got the fastest payouts. Seriously, it's just within 2 business days, and you get your money. I would only recommend the service for listeners that's been good to me. And folks, that's why I'm telling you to get to MyBookie, because you win, they pay. And beyond just the traditional bets, betting the spread, straight up, whatever you want to do, they've also got in-game live betting. They've got the best player props in the business with the most favorable rewards for you. And best of all, they've got an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go a breeze. The real perk of this, though, as a listener to me at Locked On Rockets and, well, any show across this Locked On Podcast Network, join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. All you've got to do is use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate that offer. Again, that's at mybookie.ag. So visit that site, you play, you can win, and well, within just a couple of days, you can get paid. That's courtesy of MyBookie, our sponsors over at mybookie.ag. So jumping back into the show, let off talking about James Harden, because certainly it's been a phenomenal start to the year for him, clearly the front runner in the MVP race. That's my take on it, but folks, I know you listen to the show to get more opinions than just mine, so that's why I'm going to get a guy who's been even closer to the action than me, and pretty much closer than anybody following the Rockets. That's Craig Ackerman, the team's lead radio and TV play-by-play broadcaster. He's ready and locked and good to go right now. So without further ado, let's get Craig on the phone right here on Locked On Rockets. Craig, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing a little better than you did, I guess, since you tried to brave HEB shopping on your off day.
Well, it's Thanksgiving week. I should have known not to step foot in that place, but I survived, and here we are.
Yeah, well, that's what the Rockets, they give you 3 off days. How else are you supposed to use them, I guess, other than take care of the to-do list at HEB? But at least
especially you got, since we've been on the road so much, we had one of these stretches a couple of weeks ago. You get a chance to catch up on everything that you need to do around the house that you couldn't do because you're all over the place. So
yeah, and it works out well for you and everybody because basically everybody's home for Thanksgiving. You know, you play Wednesday, you don't play again until Saturday. So yeah, you got a full Thursday and Friday. Well, I'm sure the team will practice one of those days, but you know, by and large, other than the practice, I mean, you pretty much got a couple of days off for everybody.
Yeah, it's a good time too, especially since the Rockets just got, you know, everybody back and healthy. And accounted for them a chance to, for the first time in a long time, to actually practice.
Yeah.
With everybody available and, you know, continue what has been a great start to the season.
Yep. We'll talk about the team as a whole over the next few minutes, but I want to start with the obvious theme, which is James Harden. I feel like I ask this to you every year, but now he's averaging over 30 points a game, leading league in points and assists at basically 10 a game as well, number one in every advanced metric. Craig, is this the best you've ever seen him play?
We did this 2 years ago when he put up numbers that only 4 players had done in NBA history. Mm-hmm. We talked about it again last year when you could make an argument that James Harden had the best offensive season in NBA history with the numbers that he put up last year in terms of what he contributed scoring and assisting wise. But you know what? I know this is the present time, and usually that's always the thing that comes to mind and is freshest for people. I think James might be playing the best basketball of his career right now. I mean, during this stretch of 9 games where the Rockets have won 8 of them, he has just been crazy good. The shooting, the efficiency, he's back to getting to the free throw line with regularity. He's been playing, even by his incredible standards, probably the best basketball we've seen him play. I don't think he shot it any better than this in his career. He's just been terrific. It just amazes me how good he is. And I hope people realize that they're one of the all-time greats is currently playing for their basketball team.
Yeah, I can't get over the three-point shooting percentage thing. I've already mentioned it a couple of times in the few minutes before you joined today. But to be shooting over 40% from three when you have a phenomenally high volume, you know, he's averaging over 11 attempts per game over, what 17 games? That's just a staggering number. It's not a small sample size at all. And so to be shooting over 40% despite that high volume, despite the fact that he gets everything, you know, the entire kitchen sink thrown at him from another team's defensive perspective, to shoot that high is just staggering. So certainly it shows you his work ethic. If there's anything that he needs to improve, I mean, he works as hard as anyone during the summer. One of the things I really liked about that Chris Paul documentary, the CP3 that was on ESPN a couple of weeks ago, they described Harden as a gym rat. That was the characterization that Chris had of James. This goes back to the whole recruitment process that goes back into, you know, June and however long before that. But Craig, as someone that's around the team, I'm curious your thoughts on that, because I think from the outside looking in, there's a perception of James that isn't necessarily accurate, because it sure seems like whatever minimal weaknesses they are, he works his butt off every offseason to improve whatever those limited weaknesses actually are.
He's a hooper. I think he used those words himself at one point. I mean, that's what he does. I mean, I would agree with the vast majority of people, and I think he would probably agree with this, and ultimately the coaching staff. You'd like to see his numbers in terms of his minutes played per game come down a little bit, mm-hmm. so you make sure he's as fresh as humanly possible at the end of the season. But this guy was born a basketball player. And in a similar sense, it kind of reminds me a little bit of, you know, of Luis Scola. I mean, here was a guy, I think Luis is playing in China now, but I think he's going to be playing professionally until he's like 60. I mean, that's just it's who he is. That's part of his DNA. I think this is part of James's DNA. In the summers, he's playing in the Drew League. I mean, this is what he loves to do. This is what has defined him as a person. This is what he's great at, one of the elite people on the planet at doing. And, you know, he wants to play. He wants to be on the floor. He wants to be shooting. He wants to be running with his guys. He wants to be playing in the summer. He wants to be playing in the season. He wants to be playing for the Olympic team. I mean, this is who he is. And I think that, you know, for quite a few guys, you know, that ultimately playing becomes more or less a job at some point. And maybe some of the joy of playing the game escapes people as they get older and more experienced and have sort of been there, done that. But he seems like a guy who, the more he plays, the happier he is, the better off he is, the better he gets. And that's a good thing, because I think another thing with James's game is that, you know, obviously he's still smack down to the middle of his prime. And compared to the, you know, to regular people, he's a phenomenal athlete. But I think he's got a body and a mentality and the game that is going to last well into his mid-30s. I don't think he necessarily just completely relies upon his athleticism. A lot of these guys are explosive athletes, i.e., say, Russell Westbrook. Mm. At some point, that athleticism is going to wane and their effectiveness is going to wane, but I don't think James's game is built off of that, and I think he's built for the long term. We've just seen, I mean, he bumped knees in that Phoenix game and just kind of walks it off. I mean, he's more of a machine than he is a man, and I think that's a great thing for the team and for its fans.
Yeah, I would say the combination of just his overall court savvy, his IQ, the diversity of his offensive game, it reminds me an awful lot, although he's a guard, it reminds me an awful lot of Dirk Nowitzki and Tim Duncan, two guys that lasted well into their mid-30s as far as their prime, just because, you know, it's not just the sheer athletic gifts, there's just a certain degree of intellect, there's a diversity to the skill set. That, you know, if you have that, yeah, you can, and of course you have his work ethic to go with it, because as you said, he's a hooper. That's a phrase that both he and Chris have used about him that, bodes well, not just for this season, but long term. Craig, before we get off the subject of Harden, I want to mention the three dirty letters, and I let off this show discussing it, which are MVP. And the reason I call them dirty letters, as I'm sure you've seen on Rockets Twitter, there are a lot of folks that just recoil in horror at the thought, because there's so much scarring. A lot of folks in Houston thinking that he deserved it two of the past 3 years. He didn't get it. And my argument, and I want you to kind of chime in on this, because I know you've voted for awards in the past and you have a lot of colleagues in the NBA who do vote on these awards. I'm not saying that James did not deserve the MVP award last year or in 2015. I'm not going to say that I'm okay with who won. However, this idea that folks are out to get James, to me, is very much overdone. Because if you look at Steph Curry and Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry in 2015, Russell Westbrook in 2017, those were each two phenomenal seasons. In the case of Westbrook's historic. we can draw distinctions and say, hey, we think James is a little bit better. But it's not like, you know, it's not like they're, that voters are overlooking James for someone who did not have an incredibly elite season. So it just seems like when you look at, you know, far to this point, just 17 games, just 20%, so caveat, small sample size. But to this point in the year, the gap is so large between Harden and everyone else. If it continues, I don't know. I have enough trust in the voters that if the gap stays the way it is today, I think there's a good shot that James could win. And so I'm just curious your take on that as a voter yourself and as someone who obviously knows a lot of the voters from your stops around the league.
So I'll start with what you mentioned about Curry and Westbrook those two seasons. All credit where credit is due. I agree. Those guys had amazing seasons. I mean, Curry was definitely a deserving winner in 2015, as was James for that matter, and back when I still had a vote. I mean, I obviously voted for James Harden. I felt that he should have been the MVP in 2015. But Steph Curry, again, I don't think there was any, I don't think you could fault anybody for picking Steph Curry. What Russell Westbrook did last year, obviously averaging the triple-double, was of historic nature. And Russ was, I didn't have, you know, they took away our votes, people who work for teams. But
right.
I certainly don't think there was any shame in losing to what Russell Westbrook did last season. Again, last year I thought James Harden was deserving of it as well. I think where people get frustrated, fans of the team, the organization itself, myself, the players, is that in terms of the argument between 2015 and 2017,
yes,
it seemed like the vast majority of the media narrative, the bar moved a little bit. Originally it was, well, because Steph Curry's the best player on the best team, and that should weigh heavily into it. But last year, for some reason, that particular argument was not a part of the national narrative.
Right.
That, because, you know, obviously the Rockets were far better than the Oklahoma City Thunder. Again, I don't want to take anything away from Westbrook and Curry. I thought they were deserving of the award, as I did with James Harden. But what I have trouble with is that it seems like the vast majority of national voters now, especially last year, got caught up in the whole triple-double narrative, as in a rebound or two that James didn't average for some reason, you know, made, you know, one rebound here, two rebounds there, for some reason, you know, completely changed the story when it came to his year. When you looked at all of the advanced metrics, everything pointed to last season James having had a phenomenally better season than Russell Westbrook outside of the, oh my gosh, he averaged a triple-double. And again, this is not me trying to take away from Westbrook.
Right.
I think he's a great player. I think he's one of the best watches in the entire league. I really enjoy watching him play the game with the amount of anger and explosiveness that he has. But I think if people, particularly ex-players who had votes, were a little more sincere with their research and understanding of things, I think ultimately James's season last year would have come into better focus, and he would have been the MVP. And look, I agree with you, this year from what he's done, the team is winning, so you got to use that. But I think a lot of people, at least early on through 17, 18 games of the regular season, in some respects are getting seduced by Kyrie Irving's amazing showing in crunch time. And again, I don't want to take anything away from Kyrie Irving this year. Early on, it was the massive numbers that Antetokounmpo was putting up, but that's sort of fallen off a little bit as the Bucks have fallen off in terms of their winning here as of late. But Kyrie has been truly amazing in clutch time. But I think, again, if you look at the overall body of work, James does, he's head and shoulders above everybody this year, and I'm actually kind of surprised that there's even a conversation. And I respect Mark Stein a lot. I saw him tweet out the other day or last night that he thought that Kyrie was the front runner and the only guy in the conversation was James Harden. And I thought that was a little bit bizarre, because to me, it's James Harden and then maybe Kyrie Irving in the conversation the other way around because of what he's done for the Celtics during their winning streak in crunch time. But hey, look, it's still early. There's a lot of season left. I think James's numbers, some of them are going to drop off a little bit with the return of Chris Paul. And I think he and the team will be fine with that because it'll equate to better things down the road. But James has been, as we just discussed, I think he's been as good, if not better, than he's ever been. And that's saying something.
Yeah, and I think there are a couple things I would point out with the Harden-Irving comparison. First off, it's so early in the year. I think it's easy for even voters not to look into that much depth of the two players. I think it's one of those things when you get actual closer to voting time, you'll look at some of the more advanced metrics. And last year, there were a few that showed Westbrook ahead of James. I think by and large, James had the advantage, and particularly if you would try to incorporate the winning standard, which certainly was used in 2015. But this year, when you actually look at anything beyond the surface level, anything beyond the fact that Boston's 16-2 or whatever it is, then there's no comparison between Kyrie and James. So to me, you know, using Westbrook, Harden a year ago and compared to Kyrie Harden now, I feel like, you know, and I agree with you, no disrespect to Mark Stein, generally a great reporter, but I think that's just a little too superficial. And my guess and my intuition is that the deeper you go into the year, the more these voters are actually going to do their homework. And in the case of Harden and Kyrie, they're just not even the same playing field. Whereas last year, Harden and Westbrook, even if we think Harden should have won, they were at least in the same playing field to the
Absolutely.
Point where, yeah, so you could at least understand the level of the conversation. That's one area where I think Harden's going to have an advantage on Kyrie. The other, I really think the narrative kind of works for Harden this year, because last year, going into the year, people wanted Russell Westbrook to be that great because, of course, everybody had this idea in their head of how he was going to play, and to a large extent he did after they lost Kevin Durant. It was a small market. He was playing by himself. Whereas now with James, it's a different narrative, but there is kind of a redemption story there. Redemption in the fact that, you know, some of the voters may feel for James that he didn't win either in 2015 or 2017. There's also the redemption storyline for how things ended in that Spurs series last year. But I think there's a couple of ways in which you can say that, you know, this is James' year. There's a storyline that you can kind of use for that, especially if the Rockets, of course, continue to win games, which is the main point for everything. And to kind of transition to the second part of our conversation, which is, you know, team as a whole, biggest thing that's changed recently is the return of Chris Paul. Now, he hasn't been a full-blown player yet. He played 21 minutes first game, 24 the second, but he's played two games. The Rockets have won by 20-plus, 26 and 22 in both of those. To me, watching on TV, he looks like he's moving significantly better than he did in Oakland. Just curious, your thoughts courtside, what you saw from him.
There's no question. He looked a heck of a lot better these last two nights than he did, you know, in the opener against Golden State. I will say, I mean, the level of competition, with all due respect, especially to the Grizzlies, the Warriors are one of the great teams ever assembled. And so that might have had something to do with it. I mean, as well on opening night. But he looks fresher. He looks healthier. He looks more sure of himself. I think he looks more comfortable in the surroundings, even though, again, he's hardly played with this team. Like, the thing I liked is that even throughout the injury, he was there on the bench, almost in a coaching role, every game, home, road. He was there, so he's sort of been there, done that. He's kind of gained a little bit more of an understanding of things from that perspective as he has sat and watched, quite honestly, how great James is firsthand every single night. And so I think maybe, hopefully, you know, that will sort of continue. I've never bought into the whole hot take that James and Chris can't coexist, but with the James, what he's played without him, and Chris Paul in the front seat to all of that, and then maybe hopefully will help continue, you know, the ease of that transition with those two guys. Look, they're going to continue to stagger their minutes as the season goes along, because that, you know, you want one guy, you certainly want a guy of Chris Paul's caliber to handle the ball as much as humanly possible, because, you know, you can make an argument he's the best point guard of the last decade in the league. He's going to the Hall of Fame. He's widely always been considered a top 10 player in the league. And so to negate some of his skills just because James is who he is would be foolish. And so they'll continue to stagger their minutes. Those guys will continue to get more comfortable with one another. And I've always believed that you can't have enough talent, especially in an era where Golden State, in my opinion, is four of the 20 best players in the league. You can't ever have enough talent. It's ultimately up to the guys and the coaches to make it work, because you need elite talent to win. And if the Rockets are going to try to sniff Golden State, they're going to need Chris Paul, and they're going to need other guys like him.
My sense is that it's a nice display of trust by Mike D'Antoni in both Chris and James, from the standpoint of the priority of these two games, and however long it is, because I'm sure they're not going to get him back into a 30-plus minute per game role tomorrow night. Maybe tomorrow night they edge him back into the upper 20s. We'll see. But it feels like, you know, as you said, the priority is staggering minutes. It's not even so much about how they're going to play together. It just seems like that D'Antoni senses that, you know, you have players that are this talented, and you're saying it's a league that's driven by top 20 talents, that ultimately they'll figure it out. It seems like they're not even that worried about, you know, how are Chris and James going to coexist together. And it's just a matter of, you know, the idea of staggering the minutes to where you have one elite point guard out there the whole 48 minutes. And as far as what happens the last 6 minutes of a game when they play together, you know, especially if it's a close and late scenario, it just feels like D'Antoni has a lot of trust that ultimately the talent is so much, the IQ is so much, that they'll figure it out. I mean, is that a fair assessment of it?
Absolutely. They've been that way since day one. They felt that way since the moment he was acquired from the Clippers. The discussion about can these guys play with one another has never been an internal concern at all. From the players, from the coaches, from Dale Amore, nobody has ever given that any pause at all. From the inside, all that has been external discussion, you know, about two high usage guys and can they play with one another. This trade doesn't happen if they don't want it to happen. If Chris and James didn't want to play with one another, obviously they have familiarity with one another with the national team. So if they didn't want this to happen, it never would have happened in the first place. That's how players of that level move around the league. They get to kind of pick and choose who they want to play with and where they want to go, and they wanted to play with one another, and they're going to make it work. And the thing is that they're both, again, I realize that their usage rates are historically high for both of them, but you also have to realize both guys are extremely unselfish. James has always been a willing and able passer, and so has Chris Paul. So I don't know, internally, never, not once, have they ever felt that this was going to be a problem, and neither have the two.
The team as a whole, they're 13-4 now. Certainly the return of Chris Paul has looked great the past couple of games. But I'm sure there are some people that will point out that, hey, they started great a year ago as well. They were 31-9 through the first 40 games. And then ultimately, for whatever reason, the last 40 and then the playoffs, they never fully recaptured that form from when they, you know, had a winning percentage of better than 75% through the first half of that season. And, you know, you can point to a lot of things about managing minutes. As you said earlier, that's kind of a priority for them. Now they have their full rotation back. You want to dial back everyone as much as you can, James included. But my sense, even if there's some hesitation, even they're saying, well, they started hot last year, to me, this year feels different because it's just a more diverse skill set. The toolbox just has more tools in it. Because certainly last year, James was your only true difference maker on a consistent basis. Now you've added Chris Paul. You've also had Clint Capella make this huge breakthrough. And whereas last year's team, you know, it was always an elite offensive team, they were an average defensive team. Well, now that you've added, you know, obviously we discussed Clint Capella making a jump, but then you've added Luke Bamute, PJ Tucker, you're potentially a top 10 defense as well. So I know just from a record standpoint, it feels similar to the way they started last year, but just when you actually watch them play and you look at the players on that roster, it feels more sustainable, this 13-4 start now, than maybe the hot start that 31-9 did a year ago. That's my sense on it. I'm curious, you know, how you kind of compare the two and where you think this year's team might have any advantages.
Well, last year, I thought the month of January really hurt this team. The schedule in January last year was brutal. I don't even play. And by the end of the month, I was like, when they wrapped up their schedule against the Pacers in Indianapolis and got crushed, everybody just wanted to go home. I mean, January was rough last year. I ultimately, physically, I don't think the team recovered from that because basically from that point to the end of the season, they didn't shoot it well at all, which is, needless to say, a pretty important part of what this team needs to do and wants to do if they want to be successful. I just don't think physically they recovered from January. That was one of the rougher months, schedule-wise, travel-wise, that I can remember since I've been traveling around with the team. It was exhausting. There's a long season. Injuries is always a caveat. I think the Rockets, quite honestly, have had a bit of a favorable schedule to start the year. As well, so I don't want to get too far out in front of things, but I think this is the fourth oldest team in the league. They have more guys who have been there, done that, and I think with the confidence now that this team is capable of being one of the better defensive teams in the league, and I think they've proven it from time to time, and as we sit here recording this, they are ninth in the league in their defensive efficiency, so they're on their way to becoming a top five team in the league defensively, and they're only a couple of points off of being there. So they're almost at that particular goal. They're closing in quickly on their goal of being the best offense in NBA history as they've caught up quickly to the Golden State Warriors with this run over the last 8 or 9 games. That they have been on, but as efficient as they've been on offense as a team. But I think the sense when you have more veterans coming off the bench, more reliable guys coming off the bench who can win games differently. From time to time, you got a sense that Corey Brewer can play some defense here and there, but you feel a lot better with the defensive versatility of Bamba, Tan Tucker, and Ariza. This team switches everything. That's what you need, again, in this day and age to mesh with a team like Golden State. So I think it gives you – the reason why it feels different this year is because you have more experienced guys coming off the bench. The team can play a little bit differently, and you feel confident that they can come up with stops when they need to, because you know that they can just overwhelm teams offensively. I mean, we've seen almost in every game this year where they go on a run of, 14-2, 17-2, 10-0. I mean, they can rattle off points in bunches, and now they have the personnel where they can come up with stops on a regular basis. The confidence is there that they can sustain this long-term, even through some injuries they had to start the season.
Yeah. One quick follow-up on that. You mentioned January, how brutal it was from a scheduling standpoint. That was also the month last year that they were largely without Clint Capella because he broke his, his fibula, I believe, or the tibia. I forgot which one it was, but it was...
Minnesota.
Yeah, and that was at the very end of December, so he missed most of January with that 4 weeks off, but certainly not having him played a role. Curious your take, because certainly the advanced metrics show him taking a huge leap. Actually, earlier this week, I saw one that had him second in the league in win shares for 48 minutes behind only James. Is it just a matter of his stamina being up, or what's been the difference for Clint this year relative to Clint, even a season ago when he was pretty good, but certainly not to the level of elite difference maker that he's been through the first 17 games of this year?
Well, he put on some more weight, got stronger. I think that's the first thing. But I just think he's more comfortable with his role and in this system. I mean, when he first came in the league, I'll be honest, I never even knew who the guy was when he was drafted. I mean, I was like, what? Because at that time, honestly, I thought it was more important to the organization to retain some flexibility with their cap.
Gotcha.
than draft a project coming over from Europe. But that's why I don't run the team, and Daryl does. and he, needless to say, nailed the Clint Capella pick. But I think you got to give that young guy a lot of credit. I mean, he's come in and has worked. We talked about James works, his work ethic. But Clint Capella is another guy who lives in the gym honing his craft, and he's the perfect player for the modern style of basketball with two of the great passers in the league in Chris Paul and James Harden. He's probably the best lob passer in the league, and he's always understood, accepted, and thrived in his role. Last year the Rockets were dead last in paint points allowed. I don't think that was all on Clint. A lot of that had to do with the fact that their perimeter defenders were getting beat off the dribble, and he was being put in 2-on-1, 3-on-2 situations, sort of playing free safety, trying to stop multiple players. And I think that's a tough ask of anybody. He seems to be a little bit more instinctive and explosive with his defense, especially as a weak side shot blocker. He's rebounding the ball like crazy. And I think this is just comes to do a lot to do with his experience. He's a year older. He's a year more his career. He understands the league better. Again, he's put a ton of work. I think you got to give John Lucas a lot of credit with the work that he's put in to help improve Clint as a player. And he is and has been one of the most efficient players in the league. And I think that when All-Star voting begins here in a month or whatever it is, I don't think Clint's going to be voted in to the All-Star game. But for the way this team plays and how he fits, I think he's a more valuable player to the Rockets than DeMarcus Cousins would be. I think there's no doubt that Cousins is probably individually more talented than Clint, but he fits in. And I think the numbers prove out that I think he's playing it at an All-Star level. And I don't think this team takes this additional step without it.
Yep, I agree. Folks, that's Craig Ackerman at @CA_Rockets on Twitter. Of course, you know more as lead play-by-play, both for radio and TV. Craig, thanks so much for the time. I'm guessing you're on radio this week because with her at home, is Bill going to be back? Okay.
Yeah, 11 of 14 coming up for the Rockets at home. So I will take 11 of those on the radio, and then the three three road games I'll do on TV. So this is the biggest home stretch of games throughout the season, and let's hope the Rockets can play better at home. Obviously, they're 9-1 on the road, and they've run off a record string of double-digit road victories, and let's hope that they can translate that into some dominance here at home, because they have some teams coming up that you would assume, playing at home with the caliber of team that the Rockets have, that these are games that they should all be favored in and ultimately win, because the pressure is not going to be, it's not going to stop. Golden State's going to continue to win. I know they've had some hiccups here and there, but they're going to continue to win games, and the Rockets are going to have to continue to just keep the foot down, and it'd be nice if they ended up getting the number one seed and had a home court advantage in a potential series with those guys. So these are all games that they need to take advantage of, and let's hope by the end of this stretch, they can come through and win the vast majority of these games and really kind of get a leg up heading into the Christmas holidays.
Absolutely. I've joked that, Matt Thomas, because of course Matt is only on radio when you're doing TV. I've joked that Matt's obviously the missing link in all of this, because they seem to play better when Matt's on the call for whatever reason.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a sports MT curse when it comes to the Rockets.
Yes, so, it's the hashtag sports MT blessing or whatever it is.
Yes, it is. So I guess if you want to give the credit to him, that's fine by me. As long as the team wins, it makes everybody's life around here easier, and again, let's hope that they just continue to do so.
Absolutely, and just between us, I kind of feel like, some of those starts early in the year, especially when the Astros were still going, there was just a certain kind of sense of lethargy, I feel like, around Houston, because everyone was so emotionally spent. I think now that, now the team is obviously this good, and now you're coming home, everybody's had a chance to breathe the holidays, I think there should be a pretty good opportunity for the crowds at Toyota Center to get substantially healthier again. Is that reasonable?
Can you blame people? I mean, the Astros, what an incredible run they had en route to winning their first ever World Series. So I think everybody was sort of on some level swept up in all that excitement for good reason. I think they obviously represent the city extremely well. I know everybody with the Rockets organization is very happy with the Astros' success, but the Rockets are still one of the elite teams in the league, and are one of the very few teams in the NBA who actually have a legit shot at competing for a championship this season. Again, I hope that they continue their success and can sustain that, not only in the regular season, but into the postseason as well.
Absolutely. Craig, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow, and we'll talk again soon. Okay.
Yep. Anytime, Ben. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. Thank you. That's Craig Ackerman, lead play-by-play voice for the Rockets television and radio broadcast. As I said a moment ago, if you're not already following him on Twitter, you can do so at @CA_Rockets. Same for me. You can follow me at Ben Dubose, or the show at Locked On Rockets. Again, all of us on Twitter, if you want to interact with us during the games, that's the easiest way. And once again, thanks to Craig for stopping by. He's truly one of the best in the business at what he does, so always a joy to catch up with him. And hopefully you guys enjoy his insight as much as I do, because I think he provides, he really hits the nail on the head in terms of not just the Rockets, but providing some really good context with each individual season and how it compares, not just here in Houston, but around the entire landscape of the NBA as well. Don't know how to say it much better than he has over the past 30 minutes. So once again, I will wrap things right there. Thanks as always to you guys for listening. If you want to reach out to us, as I said, Twitter is one way. You can also email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, or inquiries about how to become a potential advertiser, just as our friends over at MyBookie were today. Remember, go to mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. From there, that will activate the offer in which MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. Again, that's mybookie.ag. You can start betting, tomorrow. Rockets are back in action. There's only one game on the NBA docket tonight, but it's going to be busy tomorrow before Thanksgiving. Rockets are in action against the Nuggets here at home. Warriors play the Thunder, which either way that game ends up, there's some certain Rockets implications there. So, yeah, a lot to look forward to now that baseball's over. Football in Houston may as well be over, it feels like, with the Tom Savage era of the Texans. So, yeah, it's time to hop on board this Rockets train if you aren't already, because, yeah, there's going to be some really fun games. And not just for the basketball team, but here in Houston, as he said, 11 of the next 14 here at Toyota Center. So there's a lot to be excited about in this awesome community here in Houston, Texas. Until tomorrow, I will sign off. Again, hope everybody has a great day, and look forward to talking with you tomorrow when the Rockets finally, after 3 days off, get back to NBA play Wednesday night against the Denver Nuggets at Toyota Center. Look forward to seeing some of you guys then. For now, have a good evening.